20 years ago, I had the honor of meeting Grandma Kappas. Now, this is my husband Chad's paternal grandmother, and she was really known by everyone as Grandma Betty. Grandma Betty grew up on a farm in Iowa during the Great Depression, and she went to college at the University of Minnesota, and that's where she met her husband. They got married and have had five children, whom they raised in Hastings, Minnesota. And throughout their life, both when the children were little as well as later on in life, they traveled the world, partly because Paul was in the Navy, but partly just because they loved to travel. Now, eventually, when they were living in Hastings, Minnesota, Betty had her hand filled raising these five children. And she was a tenacious, intense, driven, and focused woman. She was definitely determined to do all the good she could to bless her family and bless the world. She was the kind of woman who knew what it was to endure heartbreak. She grieved the death of her oldest and youngest sons. She mourned the unexpected death of her husband. And the year before she died, she cared for her third son, who was also dying with terminal cancer as well. At the age of 50, once Betty's five children were a little older, at a time in life where most were interested in slowing things down a little bit, she decided to ramp it up. In fact, she worked on launching a successful biotech company headquartered in Minneapolis, where she became the top salesperson for over 30 years. Yes, 30 years, starting at age 50. So as you can imagine, meeting Betty was always larger than life. I had the honor of meeting her in 2001, and became part of the family in 2004. And I had the joy of living very close by to Betty. My first pastoral appointment was only a few miles away from her home when she moved to Woodbury. And then later, when I was appointed in Minneapolis, I was only a few miles away from her company that she was still working at. So I regularly had lunch with Betty. I probably spent more time with her than even my husband during those years because of the ways our lives intersected. And I learned quickly that Betty was the consummate matriarch. Now, she wasn't really a warm, fuzzy grandma. She was a ground shaker. She was a blessing builder. And if you married into the family, you got Grandma Betty as your grandma, too. She was the kind of woman who looked you square in the eyes with an intensity as she doled out wisdom with such conviction that you instinctually said, "Yes, ma'am," because at the end of the day, you knew her advice was forged in the fires of adversity and that she had the strength to come alongside and bless you in your own journey. Grandma Betty was determined to fill our lives with the kind of tough love, life-transformative blessings that seemed audacious and often drove you nuts in the process. And only once in my life, or even as my husband will say, only once in his life, did I even see a crack in her strength. And that particular moment was when Chad and I asked for permission to name our own child after her youngest son, who had died many years prior. And in that moment, she simply paused as there was a slight quivering of her lip for a flash and a small tear in the corner of her eye before she said quietly, "That would be very nice." You know, Grandma Betty died a few years ago, but her impact on my life and the Kappas family endures. And I think that if I were to ask each and every one of you, that you may also have some kind of common story among your family about the importance of a patriarch or a matriarch, that kind of leader of the family, the one who holds the family together, the one who embodies the values of the family, or maybe the person who leads the family audaciously, even when it drives the rest of the family nuts. Well, today, and if you don't, in our Bible story, we meet the father of us all, the greatest of the patriarchs, and his name is Abraham, or as it's listed in this part of the Bible, Abram. Abraham is someone who is known as a patriarch, a father of the faith, and he's someone who openly converses with God in his stories. Sometimes it's with an air of doubt and questioning. Sometimes it's with genuine praise to God. He was someone who was concerned about justice and the treatment of the oppressed. He was someone who made mistakes and evenly was cowardly at times. He was someone who could also make the dramatic life decisions without flinching. Abraham's story was audacious, and I bet that there were moments where he drove his family nuts. And his presentation in the Bible is very complex, revealing the struggles of a hero. As you hear the countless struggles he faces and challenges he overcame, it's like he was enduring the labors of Hercules. Now, Abraham is an important figure in our Bible, not only for us as Christians today, but he is considered the great patriarch of our three monotheistic religions that are found worldwide: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All of these religions look to Abraham as a pioneer and perfecter of their faiths. For our Jewish friends, Abraham is the founder. He is the patriarch. He is the father of the Jewish people. He is the start of the covenant. For Christians, Abraham is also, on top of that, revered in many of the New Testament letters, where he is listed up as an exemplar of the faith. And we are told repeatedly by Paul that if we have the faith of Abraham, we will find blessings in our lives. For our Muslim friends, Abraham is also respected as a prophet and a reformer. He was the first one to reject idolatry and calls for the obedience of the one true God. So I'd like to take a little bit of time today to talk about what we know of this great patriarch and why his story matters, even now, almost 4,000 years later. Well, the first is to talk a little bit about when Abraham lived. And it's true that depending about who you talk to, different scholars might date Abraham as early as 2000 BC to as early as 1400 BC. Why the range? Well, it kind of depends on your understanding of biblical interpretation and dating. If you take the Bible texts literally and do the math, you will wind up around 2000 BC. But if you tend to be of the biblical interpretation style where you understand numbers like the ancients did, where numbers were also symbolic and had a deeper meaning to help point toward a greater truth, then you might date things a little closer to 1500 or 1400 BC. Either way, wherever you put it in that spectrum, it was a long time ago. And I think it's important for us to think about the date between Abraham and ourselves as thinking about how we even think about Jesus' teachings. Think about that for us. For Jesus, Jesus lived about 2,000 years ago. Well, if you happen to live in Jesus' day, 2,000 years ago, you would think of Abraham with almost that same degree of difference, right? Where there'd be almost 2,000 years of tradition and story and importance in this great patriarch brought to you. So it's no wonder that in the New Testament communities, the role of Abraham was important. Now, the next thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is, where was Abraham from? Well, if we back up into Genesis chapter 11, we hear that a little bit about his original hometown and his family. It says in Genesis 11, Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. So from this particular scripture, and that's verse 31 and 32 of Genesis 11, we learn that Abram's original hometown was Ur of the Chaldeans. Now again, there's some scholarly debate about what does that mean. Some believe that it was the original city of Ur, which is located in the land of southern Mesopotamia, part of what's known as modern-day Iraq. Others think, no, Ur of the Chaldeans refers to Ur as a northern outpost city in northern Mesopotamia and located in the modern-day city of Urpa, which is in Turkey. Either way, whether you put them in Iraq or Turkey, we know that Abram lived in a time and a place where he was living in this Mesopotamian life, where civilization was good for merchants, and that there would have been this civilization of Ur, the major city of Ur would have been present. And Ur was a major metropolis. It had great wealth, it had literature, it had a giant ziggurat, which looks a lot like, you know, the Tower of Babel story that we didn't have time to talk about. And most people believe that when Abram lived, he probably lived during an era where there was a lot of tribal fighting, and kingdoms were still rising and falling, and there was uncertainty about the future, so it wasn't uncommon to need to move and resettle and find safer places to be. We also learn that at some point in Abram's young married life, his father Terah decides to move the whole family away from Ur of the Chaldeans and go somewhere else. And Abraham, as a dutiful son, moves along with his wife, Sarah, and they resettle in Haran. Now, at that time in history, Haran was also a merchant city, and it was in a pretty safe location. And this is actually a city that still exists today and still actually has examples of simple dwelling places built in the similar styles from the ancient times of Abraham. And so if you're curious about that, Haran is located in Turkey near the border of Syria, and there's a really interesting short clip from Rick Steves' travel show, and I'll link it in my pastor's email. So if you get my pastor's email, click on that link, and you can see a little video about what the dwelling places were like and what the culture was like in the day of Abraham. But we know in our Bible story that Abram doesn't stay in Haran. In fact, there is going to be this big movement and blessing and changes that we're about to hear in just a moment. But before we get to that, I think it's important to lift up where Abraham, who he was, when God showed up in his life. It says in the Bible that he was at age 75. Whether he was actually chronologically age 75 or whether that was just metaphorical about him being mature, it doesn't really matter. What it means is that he was no spring chicken. He had been around the block. He had become a patriarch. Terah, his father, had died. He was in charge of the family. He had no children, and he was kind of set up in his own way of being. But then, as we get to our chapter 12, God shows up and changes everything. In particular, it says in verses 1 through 3 that God says to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you. And I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." There it is, in a nutshell, the core of Abraham's story. He has this moment where he has this kind of epic theophany. At a time in his life where he probably thought things were beginning to wrap up. Maybe he had even found his forever home, or that he had finally reached a moment in his own personal life where he could reap the rewards of his labors. God shows up. And in that moment when God speaks, everything changes and the impossible becomes possible. God says to Abraham, "Go, move. I'm giving you a new home, and by the way, I'm going to make you a father, not only a father of one, but the father of many nations, which of course is a rather ludicrous idea, given that he doesn't have kids and he's pretty old. We have in this moment in the Bible, as Abraham enters the scene, a sense that God is doing something new, that God is trying in God's own ways to reclaim those same blessings given to Adam and Eve in the earlier chapters, right? And instead of being left with the mess and the chaos and just despair, God says, I am coming. I am going to make all things new. I will bless you. And we find that God is powerful and able to work creatively, intervening surprisingly in redemptive ways. And this is really the power of Abraham's story, isn't it? It's the reason that we keep retelling the story of this great patriarch, a story about a person that happens when God shows up and blesses, and the impossible becomes possible, that new realities are revealed and new strength is given to take on even the hardest journeys. And we learn in Abraham's story, in his work that we're about to hear more of in the weeks to come, of this great patriarch, that his blessing is not simply for himself, but it is to be shared with all of the families of the world. And that really is the deeper truth of when God shows up. Because when God shows up to bless our lives, it is always meant to be shared. It is always meant to be given away. It is always meant so that we can be fruitful and multiply. God's blessings are not intended to simply make a name for ourselves, but to rather make our families, our communities, our nations, and even this world great. And that's how you know plain and simple when it's from God. And this is why Abraham's story becomes our story. Because we remember that just like Abraham, God is always showing up in every one of our lives, saying to us, I am here. I will bless you so that you can be a blessing. And often in our lives, and if we were to ask many of our most beloved matriarchs and patriarchs about when they felt that sense of blessing and when they really kind of harness that power of God, they often say that it becomes later on in life. It is not necessarily early on when they're young and spry, but when they feel like maybe life should be winding down, that they get that kind of stirring in God's life. That something new is happening, and that God is opening up a possibility in their lives that is beyond their comprehension, beyond their wildest dreams, to bless them and to bless the world. We're going to hear over this time that Abraham takes decades to kind of live into his own blessing and his journey. And I think it fitting that his call story happens later in life. And it's why I wanted to share Grandma Betty's story, because if she were here today, she would tell you repeatedly that she really only began to understand that kind of life transformative blessing, that audacious, driving you nuts in the process kind of living, didn't even really take effect until her second half of life, when most people were ready to just throw in the towel and call it quits and good enough. She had that stirring in her life to transform not only her life and her family's life, but the world. And I think that in each and every one of us, it's not necessarily to form a biotech company and be a salesperson for the next 30 years, but for each and every one of us in our lives, God is constantly showing up, especially in that second half of life, saying, I am here. I am waiting to bless you so that you can bless the world. And it is our constant daily task to think and listen and to know when to go and how to move and to be audacious and sometimes even look a little bit crazy when the world tells us to slow down, that we say, you ain't seen nothing yet. Amen.